Central Time, I'm Rob Ferrich. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, President Trump said the trade war with China will push companies to bring factory jobs back to the United States. Is that actually happening? An economist joins us to tackle that question coming up. First, when you think about the Midwest, what typically comes to mind? For many around the country, they might think of rolling hills or flat areas, scenic landscapes, and farms. And more often than not, they think of people who are white. But the Midwest is not just white and rural. There are cities, bustling suburbs, and more diversity than many people think. But this is a theme that played out a couple weeks ago following the last round of Democratic debates in Detroit on television and on Twitter. And stereotypes about the Midwest could play a big role in the 2020 elections. Our next guest is here to talk about the role the Midwest plays in politics and what candidates and lawmakers get wrong about the region. Philip Chen is an assistant professor of political science at Beloit College. Phil, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
Well, before we get into this latest coming out of the Democratic debates and stuff, do you see this like the national media, national politicians, maybe because Iowa is the first state, the images, you know, corn and the state fair and tractors?
Absolutely. I mean, I think part of it is sort of the Iowa factor, right? And then I think the other part of it is just what we sort of conjure as images, the way that symbols represent, certain symbols represent certain things in not just American politics, but American society. So when we think of the Midwest, we often, like you said, think about rolling hills, farms, and predominantly historically, not as much anymore, but historically, that has been a white-dominated area and profession.
Does that skew politics? Does it skew what politicians say to try to sell themselves in the Midwest if they ignore what's really going on and just focus on that one image?
I think it does. I think the other thing we have to remember is that the parties are talking to different constituencies in the Midwest, right? So whereas the Democratic Party has done very well in urban centers and increasingly in suburban areas, the Republican Party has done very well in rural areas, and those are different demographics that they're talking to. And so the way that candidates talk about the Midwest, about this, yes, there's kind of this idealized Midwestern farmer mentality that is part of all political discourse. But when we're talking about specific targets of voters, we are seeing different constituencies that the parties are targeting.
Let's go to the debates now in Detroit. Following the last round, NBC talked to former Missouri Democratic Senator Claire McCaskill to get her take on how the presidential hopefuls performed. She pointed out Ohio Representative Tim Ryan's concerns with Medicare for all. Here's a bit of what she said.
America is generally not as far along the left line as Bernie and Elizabeth. Free stuff from the government does not play well in the Midwest because they're just convinced that they're never the ones getting the free stuff. You know, they're working really hard and they can't afford to retire.
As she went on to say that Donald Trump fed on some of those insecurities and looked to scapegoat people, Mexicans and Muslims, among others, for issues facing people in the Midwest. Some people have looked at those remarks and said this is a stereotype of this. So maybe a particular constituency in the Midwest, yeah, is fairly described there, but maybe not the whole deal.
Right. I think that's a fair way to think about it. The other thing is what she's really talking about isn't an objective point of view about how much money is going into rural America or to the Midwest versus how much is coming out in taxes. We know Kathy Kramer right here on campus at the University of Wisconsin has wrote an entire book about this that shows that actually rural areas take in more in services than they do than they pay in taxes. So it's she's not talking about it in that sense. She's talking about it in this kind of sense of what does it mean to be self-reliant, to be an individual, and to sort of be self-supporting. And in that sense, the rhetoric around Medicare for all strikes at that at what she's getting there, even though the statistics around tax monies and services coming in and going out don't match up to that idea.
Talking about the national image of the Midwest and how it plays into politics, Democratic and Republican, you can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think national politicians, the national media gets wrong or gets right about Wisconsin and the Midwest in general? Philip Chen is with us from Beloit College. Again, you can join in 800-642-1234. One, two, three, four. Does urban, the urban Midwest, get overlooked in national politics?
I guess defined overlooked is a hard thing. I mean, does it get overlooked by the Democratic Party? No, it's where it's the core base of support in states like Illinois. You know, 60%, I think, about of voters in Minnesota reside in either an urban or a suburban area. So they're not overlooked as in terms of who's being targeted as far as turning out voters. But they aren't. Urban centers are not included in the sort of colloquial images, the symbolism of the Midwest in many ways. When politicians talk about the Midwest, they aren't talking about urban centers. And in that sense, McCaskill is right in that that's not what people conjure in their image of the Midwest. But are they ignored by the parties? I don't think so. I think that the Democratic Party relies on urban centers for large swaths of their voters in the Midwest.
Now, following this thread that kind of emerged from the debate there, and people who don't follow stuff online may have missed this. So I'm going to sum up a little bit. After these comments, Waleed Shaheed, a Democratic strategist, pointed to the fact that Representatives Ilhan Omar and Rashida Tlaib of Minnesota and Michigan were also from the Midwest. And then Jonathan Wiseman in the New York Times said, hold on, saying Rashida Tlaib and Ilhan Omar are from the Midwest is like saying Austin Representative Lloyd Doggett is from Texas and Atlanta Representative John Lewis is from the Deep South. So the idea that you're from the Midwest, but you're not the, I don't know, real Midwest, mm-hmm. that's not a phrase he used, but that's the implication a lot of people took out of that.
Yeah, I think that you're right. The implication people got was that there, when we say Midwest, we mean not these urban centers. To be fair, I think when a lot of people say Midwest, that's what they are envisioning. That's what they're thinking of. We know this both colloquially and through image, you know, through research. You know, DeVos and Banaji have a wonderful article using implicit association tests that show that American symbols are increasingly and heavily associated with whiteness. And so, yeah, absolutely, these are key components of what people are thinking of when they say Midwest. And I think that's what he was getting at. But admittedly, yes, Ilhan Omar is from the Midwest. She's from Minneapolis. There's no denying that Minneapolis is in Minnesota, which is part of the Midwest.
Now, if there's another stereotype, a quick shortcut for the Midwest and the urban Midwest in particular, okay, forget the farmland. People might be thinking Rust Belt, mm-hmm. once thriving manufacturing towns now filled with decay and closed down factories and declining populations. Mm-hmm. That's been true. That is true for some places at some times. What does that say to you about our politics that we kind of focus on that when we think of urban Midwest?
So I think what that says is that we rely on cultural stereotypes that have been perpetuated throughout the media, throughout time, right? This is the vision of the Midwest, at least the Rust Belt Midwest, has been of factories, of work, and it plays right into the American narrative, right? This American creed of hard work, working in a factory, working in a steel mill, plays right into that image of America. And so that kind of trends naturally from that. But the thing to remember is many of those cities are heavily African-American or minority. They're not all white cities.
Right. People point toward Youngstown, Ohio, mm-hmm. the idea that, okay, to win in a place like that, you need to appeal to the white working class there. And people point out, like, wait, Youngstown, for example, has a big African-American
exactly.
population.
Right. And this is part of this is that it's a function of the way that segregation has happened in urban centers in the north versus urban centers in the south. And so we look at how segregated housing and employment is in cities like Milwaukee, in cities like Detroit, and we see high levels of segregation. And so we don't see as much interaction between racial groups. And that, I think, is going to create some of this problems of what the image of, say, Youngstown, Ohio is.
Talking to Philip Chen right now, assistant professor of political science at Beloit College. He's with us to talk about how the Midwest fits into our political discussions and how the misconception, you see this a lot in politics, that the region is largely rural and white, ignoring a lot of the The diversity, the urban and suburban areas, doesn't tell the full story. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think people say from the coasts miss when it comes to the Midwest, whether it's culturally or politically? If you follow politics, what do you think about how the Midwest is portrayed by people running for president, people in the media reporting on the people running for president? What do you want national politicians to know about Wisconsin, about the Midwest? Call now, 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or tweet us at Central Time WPR. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Right now, we continue our conversation about how the Midwest is frequently portrayed, maybe mischaracterized by politicians and the media, looking at the area as mainly rural, mainly white. Talking to Philip Chen right now, assistant professor of political science at Beloit College. You can join in at 800-642-1234. How would you like to see the Midwest talked about in political conversations? What do you think maybe people running for president get wrong about states like Wisconsin? But what do you think about the way national media gets things wrong about Wisconsin? If you live in a rural part of the state, what do you think is missed when talking about your town, village, county? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or tweet us at Central Time WPR. Phil, I don't want to go through here being, oh, poor Midwest, everybody gets this wrong. I assume we have stereotypes, like if we picture California as a, I don't know, Hollywood producer in a hot tub and New York as a Wall Street executive. I don't know,
absolutely,
doing rich person things. Like, we're missing a lot there, too.
Of course. I mean, stereotypes are cognitive shortcuts, right? In the terms of psychology, right? They're a way for us to group large amounts of people into a small set of characteristics, and they rarely are accurate as far as describing all those people. So yeah, we absolutely have stereotypes about what it means to be a New Yorker, and I'm sure people from upstate New York would be dismayed at times about what we might think of in the Midwest as a New Yorker if we're thinking people who live in Manhattan. Same thing with California. You know, we think of, and California is a great example. We often think of California as sort of Southern California, LA, or, you know, San Francisco area. There's plenty of parts of California that have trended, have been consistent Republican strongholds, and they just don't sort of enter into our images of what it means to be from California.
Looking at Wisconsin in particular, we've got this situation. We've got, okay, Milwaukee County and Dane County, mm-hmm. Democrats know they've got them.
Yep.
There's the suburban counties around Milwaukee. Republicans know they've got them. Mm-hmm. And you've got counties like, what, Crawford County, some of the Southwest that had some of the biggest Obama to Trump swings
yep.
in the country. So maybe you want to swing your pitches to that place that might actually change its vote.
It's true. I mean, so this of course, is the constant debate in campaigns, right? Do you focus on persuasion, on switching people's votes, or do you focus on turnout? Do you focus on getting people that you know are going to support you to turn out? Most of the research we see now says that, by and large, elections are about turnout. It's about getting the people who you know will support you to come out and vote. And so the question, of course, is, did the, you know, southwestern portion of Wisconsin really have a lot of people who switch sides, or did just different people turn out? Did Obama just perform particularly well and get people excited and energized, and then we saw Clinton perhaps not do the same? So, you know, it's a tough causal link to draw as to whether people are switching sides or simply deactivating, getting less interested in politics, being less likely to turn out. And so that's kind of the issue. So is it about tailoring your response or your appeals to the Southwest? Maybe. Maybe it's also about spending more time in Milwaukee. We saw just as much coverage saying Clinton campaign didn't do enough in Milwaukee to turn out voters in Milwaukee County.
Is there something in our stereotypes of states because of the winner-take-all nature of a race for Senate, a race for president? If 51% votes Republican, you're a red state. If 51% votes Democrat, you're a blue state, and you ignore a lot of the nuance beneath the color.
Yeah, absolutely. That's part of it. And I think the other reason that that becomes part of this is that when we look at the coasts and the South, most of those states are solidly red or blue. Right. And so when you're talking about states that are so the Midwest becomes part of the conversation because they were the tipping point states. They were the, you know, the states that make the difference in the Electoral College, and they were close. In the same, you know, we don't talk about Republicans in California. We don't talk about Democrats in Alabama, except, of course, when Doug Jones runs, largely because those states are pretty solidly in, you know, the Democratic or Republican coalition. And so the Midwest enters into this because, one, they're the states have been fairly closely divided in recent elections, but also because they're the states that make that are sort of the tipping point states within the Electoral College.
Talking to Philip Chen, assistant professor of political science at Beloit College, looking at national stereotypes about the Midwest, especially in political seasons. Seems like it's always political season. I know. When is it not? You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you want presidential candidates to know about Wisconsin, about the Midwest? What do you think people get wrong? Still time for you to join in at 800-642-1234. You know, part of all this seems like the performance nature of running, I guess, especially for president. You want to show that you're a regular Joe or Jill. And so you want to do, if you're in Iowa, win in Iowa, eat corn, I guess,
yep.
Or corn dogs.
Yeah. You want to go to the state fair. You want to, you know, you want to visit every county, right? These, you know, you're going to be on a bus. You're going to drive around. You do the things that you are expected to do when you are campaigning in Iowa for, you know, an early season primary. But again, Iowa especially is not particularly indicative even of the rest of the Midwest. Iowa does not have – I mean, Iowa has Des Moines. It has Council Bluffs. It has Iowa City. So it has, you know, some urban centers, but not to the same extent that, say, even Milwaukee in Wisconsin or the Twin Cities in Minnesota have real concentrations of voters in tightly packed urban areas.
Over the years, I've seen some people say that exact thing skews actual policy decisions. The fact that Iowa is so early, looms so large in presidential primaries, that you see a lot more attention paid to, like, ethanol subsidies, mm-hmm. Say, if Iowa was later in the pack, you know, that would be an issue, but it wouldn't be such a defining issue early in a presidential race.
I mean, I think it definitely skews the language that candidates are using. Whether it skews actual policymaking later on down the line, that's, I think, a little bit more, that's a much harder case to make. But absolutely, it skews what politicians talk about, right? If you, and when you start the calendar with Iowa and then New Hampshire, you're talking about two states that are not particularly racially representative. These are highly, highly white-dominated states. If you started the calendar in California and Texas, you'd get a much different view of what the candidates thought about those issues. Would it change the policies that they actually implement in the end? That's a little bit harder to prove, right? Because it's a primary versus a general. It's, you know, 11 months basically before the election, and then you've got there's just so many moving parts that it probably doesn't skew policy so much as it skews the conversation around the election.
Let's bring on a caller. Jerry is with us in Madison. Jerry, hi.
Hi. Waukesha County in Wisconsin typically turns out has a voter turnout of 90 to 95% election after election after election. And whereas the rest of the state and country has to struggle to get a 50% turnout, even in a presidential year election. And I'm just wondering, how does that work? How do they do that?
Jerry, thanks for the call. I don't know about 90s. Waukesha has high turnout.
Waukesha has high turnout.
Dane County sees, like, really what would often be seen as ridiculously high turnout numbers, too.
Yeah. I think what you see is counties that are skewed into what we know predicts voter turnout: education, income, political engagement. These are counties that are targeted heavily by the parties that have fairly wealthy, well-educated populations. Those are the people that we know are already inclined to turn out and are very much inclined to turn out when they are targeted by the parties. And so just as Republicans know that Waukesha County is a very good stronghold for them and they're going to put effort into turning it out, Democrats know the same thing for Dane County. And so it's a confluence of factors. It's individual level factors and party targeting factors.
And again, contrary to the rural image or Rust Belt image, Waukesha County is not those two things.
Right.
It's a suburban area that I don't think people around the country think about when they think about Wisconsin.
No, I don't think they do. And that's, you know, that's the other thing we have to remember. In even within the Republican coalition in Wisconsin, the Republican coalition in Wisconsin is not simply rural Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. It's also suburban Milwaukee. Increasingly, the Republican Party is losing some of those suburbs in some states. We're not seeing it as much in Wisconsin yet, but we're seeing a shift in the Republican Party in who they're appealing to and who is turning out to vote.
We had a caller who couldn't stay on the line wondering why Minnesota Senator Amy Klobuchar isn't getting as much attention as other candidates. I mean, if people want to focus on the Midwest, there's a senator from the Midwest. I mean, Pete Buttigieg from Indiana, Midwestern, getting a little more attention. Claire McGaskill not doing so hot from Missouri. But yeah, there's a Midwestern senator not really making waves there.
There is. I mean, and it's kind of the vagaries of the party system. I mean, we're talking, 20-plus political candidates here. And you look at the candidates that are making, have the most coverage and the highest support tend to be candidates that have long-term name recognition nationally. Aside from someone like Buttigieg, who is just sort of this, has kind of spiked in support and is sort of trailing. So, it's possible that Klobuchar's time is coming to sort of have her support spike. But again, the Midwest, while important in the national coalition and the Electoral College coalition, still doesn't, when we're talking about national polls, there's still only so much, so many people who live in the Midwest. And so there's going to be some of that skewing as well.
You know, we're in the age of micro-targeted advertising. Mm-hmm. If I liked grape chewing gum, which I don't, but if I did, and marketers would know it and would sell me on it, if I'm a politician, do I want a big message that's going to appeal to everybody, or do I need to come up with a system to get those specific targets to that rural voter, that suburban voter, that urban voter?
I mean, it's a boring answer, but you want both, right?
Okay.
You want an appeal that can build your support nationally, and you want to be able to target individual voters. You want to have an enthralling platform that brings people out, and then you want to be able to take that platform and apply it directly at the micro level. That's that's what we see increasingly is not when we talk about micro targeting, we're not talking about two separate policy positions and diametrically opposed. We're talking about frames that are differently presented to these smaller groups. And that seems to be the way that we're seeing politics move and communication.
Phil, thanks a lot for joining us.
Anytime.
It's Philip Chen from Beloit College looking at the Midwest in the political landscape.